Thank you, Chris. Thank you for your invitation. Thank you for your welcome. I became a Christian 18 years ago. So that's a couple of years after the Toronto blessing came to prominence. Now, when I became a Christian, I heard other Christians talking about the Toronto blessing. But I myself was only aware of it by name and little more, which is to say, I'd heard of it. I didn't move in any church circles which had anything to do with it. It pretty much passed me by. And at that time, I just started training to become a journalist. And that training involved some stints at local newspapers, some time at the BBC, and some time, I'm ashamed to say it, at the now notorious News of the World. Now, after completing my training, I took a job at the Christian Institute, eventually becoming its head of communications. And my role there involved a lot of contact with the secular media, especially the religious affairs and social affairs correspondents of the national press and broadcast media. And in that time, I also had the opportunity to write articles which were published by The Independent, The Daily Telegraph, and The Daily Mail. My role at the Christian Institute also involved campaigning efforts with government and with our parliament. Now, I only mention these things because when Chris first contacted me to come and speak at this conference, I'm sure that part of his reasons was all of that background and experience that I'd had. He wanted to know from my own professional experience over 15 years, what impact the Toronto blessing has had, if any at all. And so the title for my address today is 20 Years On, The Social Impact. I want to begin with a quote from a book called Keep the Fire, written by John Arnott. This book was first published in 1995 in North America. It was then published a year later in 1996 here in the UK. Now, John Arnott, we've already heard that name from Chris. In 1988, John Arnott founded the Toronto Airport Christian Fellowship. It's since been rebranded as Catch the Fire Toronto. And it was in this church that the Toronto blessing first took off in January 1994. Now, according to the blurb on the back of his book explores what receiving the Toronto blessing means for you, your church, your friends, and those who have not yet heard the good news of Jesus Christ. In other words, the book explores what the Toronto blessing means for everybody in the whole world. Now remember, that book was published in 1995, just 1 year after the Toronto blessing had properly begun. And that in itself is quite an undertaking. But here's the quote I want to begin with. It comes from a section in the book called Spreading the Fire. God is indeed raising up an army full of love and grace and the Holy Spirit. Suddenly a trumpet will sound, go forth and bring in the harvest, and the church will see a victory like we have not seen for 2,000 years. It's coming, and I believe a great and abundant harvest is at hand. And then John Arnott goes on to say, The Spirit of God is now moving like he has not moved in 90 years since the Pentecostal revival swept the earth. In our meetings in Toronto, we have witnessed thousands of believers being transformed by the power of God, strengthened and healed, and becoming ready for Christian service. The blessing is spreading rapidly into every nation and denomination. God is up to something big. I believe it is the greatest harvest of souls that the world has ever seen. In the same section of the book, John Arnott says, by May 1994, the secular press had picked up on the story, particularly in the United Kingdom, and for the most part have written and given very favourable media reports. And this has informed more and more people of what's going on. It's helped pique the interest of thousands around the globe. Can you see what Mr. Arnott is saying? He's saying that the Toronto blessing is a great movement of God which will herald in the largest number of conversions in all of human history, and that it has been generally welcomed by the secular press, particularly in the United Kingdom. Well, now, as someone whose background is in journalism, I was very interested when he said that, and I wanted to know whether it was really true. I wanted to know whether all those hopes set out in that book, whether they ever really materialised. But before I go into it, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that the secular press must be our barometer of whether something is a genuine work of God or not. And I'm not saying we necessarily ought to be holding the Toronto blessing up to that standard. But I'm simply relating to you some of the expectations of the central characters who were pushing the blessing. I'm simply quoting them in their own words and asking, did it turn out to be as they said it was going to be? I became pastor at Cholton Evangelical Church in December of last year. But I still got lots of friends at the Christian Institute. So I pulled in a few favours from some of my old colleagues and I asked them to provide me with the raw data from all the United Kingdom newspaper archives. I asked them to tell me how many times the phrase Toronto blessing had appeared in the United Kingdom press from now going all the way back to 1994. And I asked them to search national, regional and local newspapers. And the search results came back. From 1994 to our present day, there have been 128 newspaper articles which make mention of the Toronto blessing. And in preparation for this, I have read, or at least skim read, all 128 of them. Now, firstly, let me break them down by year, in terms of the year in which they were published. And this is what we get. You see that it starts in 1994, it rises rapidly, but then, you know, tails off rather dramatically and bumps along at the bottom in just single digits. And that reflects, I think, something of what Chris had just been saying, that, you know, it became a great phenomena during the kind of mid-1990s with its peak around about 96, 97, but quickly tailed off. And yes, it continued somewhat, but it was a blip during the 90s. Next, let's look at the kind of newspapers which reported on it. Now, this chart breaks down the press coverage by the most mentioned sources. And as you can see, the Times and the Guardian come out top. But the thing that I find most interesting about this chart is that the coverage is dominated by the broadsheet newspapers. There are only two mass market titles on this chart, the Daily Mail and the Scottish Daily Record. And even then, they only account for 7 of the articles between them. Now, that suggests to me that the press coverage about the Toronto Blessing had failed to reach the ordinary man on the street, and instead was a kind of passing fascination by the secular intelligentsia. They regarded it as something to point at and laugh at. Now, what about this claim from John Arnott that the press interest had been largely favourable about the Toronto Blessing? Remember what he said. He said that for the most part, it had been very favourable media reporting. Well, as I said, I've read all 128 articles and I did a content analysis of them. I broke them down into generally neutral, generally positive, or generally negative reporting. And here are the results. As you can see, only 5% of the coverage was generally positive. 36% was generally neutral, and the majority, 59%, was generally negative. Now, the handful of positive stories that I read were related to churches which were on the last legs numerically, but the Toronto Blessing had swept in. Suddenly their meetings are full of people, and some of the secular journalists saw that and thought, well, at least it stopped this one church closing down. That's the kind of positive reporting that was happening about the Toronto Blessing. Now, the large slice, 36% of generally neutral reporting, was because most of those articles were just making a passing reference to the Toronto Blessing. So, for example, there were quite a lot of stories within those 128 that were talking about the Alpha Course. And so, of course, there was passing reference to the Toronto Blessing at Holy Trinity Brompton. And they weren't particularly making a positive point or a negative point. It was just a neutral statement of fact. If I'd had more time, I'd have liked to have isolated those articles which majored on the Toronto Blessing and done a content analysis of those. And I think that if I had, you'd have seen a much larger percentage of negative coverage. Even so, 59% of the coverage was generally negative. The word hysteria or hysterical occurred 35 times. The word controversy or controversial appeared 40 times. The word cult appeared 15 times. The phrase brainwashing appeared 3 times. The word bark appears 30 times. The word convulse or convulsions appeared 15 times. The word danger or dangerous appeared 29 times. The word abuse appeared 18 times. The word drunk or drunken appeared 11 times. The word craze or crazy appeared 11 times. Those were the kind of negative words which surrounded the coverage of the Toronto Blessing. And here's a visual representation of those words and how often they appeared in the press coverage. The size and prominence of the word relates to how frequently those words appeared in the press coverage. Now, again, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that the secular press coverage was fair or even accurate. I mean, hyperbole and exaggeration are commonplace in the British press. But I'm simply telling you what the media coverage has been like these past 20 years. And on any analysis, it simply cannot be described as, for the most part, very favourable. As you can see, on the whole, it has been largely negative. But of course, the media isn't the only sector of society by which we might measure the impact of the Toronto Blessing. It occurred to me that, seen as though it had been in the press, particularly in the mid-1990s, that I will look at the United Kingdom Parliament to see what reference had been made to the Toronto Blessing there in the last 20 years. And again, to see whether any of those references were generally positive or generally negative or generally neutral. So I searched for the phrase Toronto Blessing in the official records of the United Kingdom Parliament, and here are the results. It starts off at zero in 1994, and it carries on to zero all the way across to our present day. There hasn't been a single mention of the Toronto Blessing ever in Parliament. Not once in the House of Commons, not once in the House of Lords, not once in a committee hearing, not even a joke at its expense, not even an off-the-cuff remark, not a sneer, not a jeer, nothing. And I have to say, I was genuinely surprised. In the mid-90s, there was a spike in media coverage. I did expect to see some reference to it in Parliament, but no, nothing. Now, just to put that in context, I thought, well, I'll search for a different term. I'll just pluck a term out of thin air and see how many times that was referenced in Parliament. So I decided to go for the term Mickey Mouse. And these are the results for Mickey Mouse. Now, as you can see, Mickey reached his high point in the year 2003 with 20 references to his name. Now, I'm not trying to be flippant or to make light of this or to poke fun at anyone. I'm simply trying to show that the Toronto Blessing had absolutely no impact in our national parliament. What about the government? Has Toronto Blessing had any impact in government? Well, I decided to search every government website to see if there was any reference to it. So I searched for the phrase Toronto Blessing on all websites ending in gov.uk. And here are the results. Two references to the Toronto Blessing on a government website. They were both from the same Scottish education quango, and they both related to teaching materials for a course studying religious experiences as part of religious, moral and philosophical studies in Scotland. But that's it. Just two references. So again, to put that in context, I searched for Mickey Mouse on all websites ending in .gov.uk, and there were 3,780 results. If you're wondering why our government and parliament are talking about Mickey Mouse, don't ask. Now, let me just summarise what I've said so far. We began with a quote from John Arnott, the founder of the Toronto Airport Christian Fellowship, where the Toronto Blessing began in January 1994. Mr. Arnott said God was doing something big. He said the Toronto Blessing was ushering in a powerful new movement of the Spirit, which would lead to the greatest harvest of souls in 2,000 years. It's going to affect every nation, he said, and every denomination. He said the secular media had picked up on the story, particularly in the UK, and their coverage had been mostly favourable. And he said that the media would help spread the message to thousands of people across the world. Well, we've looked at the UK press coverage. And yes, there was a blip in the mid-1990s, but it quickly faded away, and it's been bumping along in single digits ever since. And even then, the coverage was almost entirely in the broadsheet press. It hardly ever made it into the mainstream popular newspapers. And the clear majority of the coverage was negative, using words like controversial and dangerous. The Toronto Blessing has never been mentioned in Parliament, and I could only find two obscure government references to it in a Scottish education quango. So what do we make of Mr. Arnott's claims? I have to conclude he was deluding himself. Not only that, but he was deluding others. Now, I don't believe he was deliberately setting out to deceive anyone. Now, remember, those remarks came from a book which was hastily written and published about a year after the Toronto Blessing first came to light. I think he just got caught up in the moment. His church was at the centre of an international news story with thousands of church leaders jetting in from all over the world. Now, I've never been in that situation. Maybe God will bless Chorlton Evangelical Church in a particular way, but I can't see it somehow. But I do know what it's like to be caught up in the centre of media interest. I know what it's like to have the phone ringing off the hook with journalists all clamouring for my attention. I was once involved in a legal action against the internet giant Google. There was a lot of media interest in that story, particularly in the United States. And so I flew out to Washington, D.C. I met with a lot of powerful and influential people. I did a lot of media interviews. And the case was even discussed on America's most popular TV news show. And that sort of experience, when you're caught in the middle of it, can be very disorientating. It's very easy to lose grip on reality. You know, while the media are interested, it really does feel like you're the center of the universe. It's very easy to think that the world's revolving around you. But, you know, as soon as the media interest goes, that's all gone. It goes as quickly as it came. No one really remembers who you are or what you said. It's so easy to get caught up in the moment. I think that's what happened to Mr. Arnott and countless others during the Toronto Blessing. They just lost a sense of perspective. So if the Toronto Blessing failed to have any significant positive impact on society, well, the next question we have to ask ourselves is, did it do any damage? Did it damage the credibility of churches, especially evangelical churches? When I considered that question, my mind turned to some outreach work that our own church has done this summer. As part of our outreach drive, we went door to door with a survey in our local area of South Manchester. And one of the questions we asked ourselves was, what does the word evangelical mean to the general public? And so we asked people, what does the word evangelical mean to you? Now, most people didn't have any idea at all. They just simply didn't have a clue. The word meant nothing to them. But for those who did express a view, the most common answer was that it meant lively and American. And that got my mind ticking. I wondered whether there had ever been any serious professional polling of public attitudes to the word evangelical. I wanted to know, what does the general public really think about the word evangelical? Now, in my previous job, I worked a lot with commercial pollsters, and so I got out my old contacts book and got in touch with one of them. I spoke to one of the leading polling companies in the UK and asked them if they knew of any research that had been done on this question. And they said that they were not aware of that research ever having been carried out in the UK, but they did suggest I looked at America. Now, the best I could come up with was a poll conducted in 2008 by Grey Matter Research and Consulting. And they asked over 1,000 adults this question. The phrase evangelical Christian is used in the media a lot. In your own words, how would you define exactly what an evangelical Christian is? Please be as specific and complete as you can in your answer. Now, by far, the single biggest answer was, I don't know. 36% said, I don't know, I couldn't even guess. Which backs up what we found on the doors around Chorlton. But that made up about a third. Of the remaining two-thirds, people gave an incredible array of different answers, some of them quite accurate and positive, you'd be glad to know, but an awful lot of them quite negative. Listen to this comment from the organisation that conducted the research. They said, one thing to take away from this study is how much negativity there is toward evangelicals in general, and not just from political liberals. Evangelicals were called psychos, stupid, narrow-minded, bigots, idiots, manipulative, fanatics, greedy, pushy, loud-mouthed, nutcases, hypocrites, illiterate, screaming loons, delusional, fake, crazy, nutjobs, nitwits, and freaks. Now, how much of that image of evangelical Christians is the result of Toronto Blessing? Well, some of those words are quite similar to the words used in the news coverage of the Toronto Blessing. But I think it would be quite wrong of us to say that the Toronto Blessing is solely to blame for that perception. I've tried to argue that the Toronto Blessing has had much less impact on society than its leading lights would like to suggest. And I can't have it both ways. I can't say it's had hardly any impact at all and then say it's to blame for creating this terrible stereotype of evangelical Christians. But you know, those newspaper reports and TV pictures from the early 1990s of people rolling around on the floor, laughing, howling like animals, walking around like they were drunk. I mean, it doesn't help, does it? Now, I'm not saying we as evangelicals should employ pollsters and image consultants and PR specialists to give us a makeover so that the general public has a more accurate understanding of what the word evangelical really means. But I am saying we should take the words of the Apostle Paul seriously in 1 Corinthians 14. All things should be done decently and in order. Otherwise, outsiders and unbelievers will say, you are out of your minds.